Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Earle and I'm joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Stephen Warnock, Liverpool, Aston Villa and Blackburn fame. And today we break down week 23 of the Premier League season. Our topics today are Arsenal dropping points at home, joined to Brentford 1-1, while Manchester City beat Aston Villa 3-1. To go just 3 points behind Arsenal, setting up a massive showdown on Wednesday night. Manchester United beat Leeds 2-0, another Marcus Rashford goal. Liverpool win the Merseyside derby, beating Everton 2-0, while Newcastle stumble and Eddie Howe's return to Bournemouth. They drew 1-1, and Tottenham have no answer for Leicester City, losing 4-1. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. So, Stephen, we're going to start the weekend. At the Emirates, Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I think people are starting to just wonder, is this the period where things start to go a little bit awry? They lost to Everton last week 1-0, we know. Didn't play particularly well. They draw 1-1 at home to Brentford. And we know that they've got the big game coming up against Manchester City. I think the critics, those who are looking at Mikel Arteta's team and don't quite feel they're going to be good enough to go the distance, are looking at the club now and starting to say, this is the reason why. Are they valid reasons, or can they still maintain the kind of form they've shown and hang in there?
I think it's a very interesting thing to look at, because I watched the game against Brentford, and it was one of the games that was sort of I was asked to watch.
Yeah, a 10 o'clock window, wasn't it, where there's different games going on.
But yeah,
you concentrated on
I concentrated
one.
On that one, because I just wondered, with Brentford being such a difficult team to break down and well organised, and Thomas Frank went there, changed his formation. He went to a 3-5-2, and he set them up extremely well. Yeah. But what Arsenal seem to be, they just seem to be a little bit leggy at the moment. And I look at the squad and I go, is there enough depth in there? Compare them to Manchester City and the changes that they can make. Is it now starting to hamper them and they're starting to feel it? If you look at the changes, they don't make too many changes to the starting 11 unless they're forced upon with injury. In the game against Brentford, They didn't move the ball quickly. Brentford counter-attacked them time and time again. Ivan Toney could have had a couple of goals, hit the crossbar. And I know Mikel Arteta said after the game, we were in control of the game. I didn't feel like they were completely.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Mikel Arteta is probably trying to psychologically get into the players' heads a little bit.
Yeah,
he's got to do that. And that's good management from Mikel Arteta. But I think the big test is obviously against Manchester City.
It's interesting, Steve, because you know, we both played. We both know the situation. And kind of, I wonder with Arsenal, is it the legginess? Is it a little bit of fatigue that, you know, this Premier League season, 38-game season, World Cups and all that that's gone on? Is that the effect? Or some are suggesting that there's a mental fatigue that comes in. There's a slog of the Premier League, and this is a young team who've never been the distance before, a young manager who's never been the distance before. Are we sort of automatically saying, well, this is going to happen, this is something they might have to overcome? Because I have to say, we were saying the same thing with Leicester City.
Yeah.
Leicester City ended up going all the way and winning the title. So, I just, you know, as a former player, where do you sit on that one?
I think when you look at when Leicester won the league, City weren't at the brilliant best.
No.
And this is the big thing for me. It's like having a race over 100 metres and you start on the 70-metre line. Or 30-metre line, you've got 70 to run.
Okay.
But you've got Usain Bolt behind you. Mm. And you know he's coming at some point.
Yeah.
And you know he's capable of beating you. And that's the way I liken it and think, you've got Manchester City. We know they're capable
they're the
of putting
Usain Bolt
runs
to the Premier League.
Yeah. And I just look at them and think, the strength in depth, they've not been at the best. They beat Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, albeit in a different competition. But I just look at that and I think of, like you said there, Arteta's not been here. He's been there in the changing room with Pep.
Yeah.
But it's a different case when you're doing it on your own. Players out of form, how do you handle the changing room? I don't know whether Mikel would have been privy to all of what Pep was thinking in his head at times, the sleepless nights and things like that. Yeah. Now he's got to deal with all that. This is news to Mikel Arteta. I think it's huge strides for the football club and where he's got them. Yeah. However, we just don't know, because a lot of questions have been asked of Arsenal and they've come back and answered them. Mm. They lost to Manchester United. How would they react to that? Yeah. And then they went on this great run and Arteta seemed to learn a lot tactically, because I think he made a couple of substitutions within that game. And I loved it when he came out after the game and said, I think I got that wrong.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Honest, yeah.
Because I've learned from it and I will learn from it. It's fascinating.
So I'm here to throw the counter argument. So, you know, there was some talk this weekend that maybe, you know, is Pep getting into Arteta's head? You know, we saw and we talked about that Rodri at the come over and do an interview, and we talked about, you know, Bernardo Silva playing as a third centre-back, and is that going to, you know, affect, you know, the Arsenal game coming up on Wednesday? So people are kind of feeling like Pep can get into Arteta's head. I want to go the other way. What about Arteta getting into Pep's head? Arteta's been with him, as you said, through many great title wins, knows the guy, knows his tactics, knows the way he works, knows the way he sets up in big games. They've lost two games so far this season, Arsenal. Man City have lost four. They've got the second-best attacking record in the league, the second-best defensive record in the league. What about Arsenal getting a win through their good football, through a little bit of luck, through, you know, fighting it out, and having a five-point gap with a game in hand? All of a sudden, the narrative looks and feels a lot different. So I just wonder if there's a big performance in Arsenal waiting to come out.
I think 100% there's a big performance there. And I think when you talk about the tactics going head-to-head, how often have we seen in the past in the Champions League where Pep's overthought it?
Correct, yeah.
And that's one of my things where I think, is he going to overthink this, or is he going to say, no, do you know what? This is what brings me success. I'm going to stick to that. Mm. And that will be fascinating to see.
Yeah.
But I almost look at it as, again, you go the grandmasters of chess. Because the way Arsenal and Manchester United play, they almost move pieces in the right place, and it builds an attack, or it builds a shape in what they do. It wouldn't surprise me if it was a very cagey game, but one moment of brilliance. Because we know that both teams have got it. We look at Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli, Trossard, who's being influential off the bench, which is a huge plus. Yeah. But then we go to Manchester City, and you just look at Silva, De Bruyne, and then you just go, Haaland. That one chance that might fall to him, will he be clinical? Will he get that opportunity? I can't wait to watch the game, to see these two minds go at it. I spoke to someone at the Arsenal training, part of the Arsenal staff a while ago. He's on the fitness side of things. He was my old fitness coach at Aston Villa. And he said it's fascinating listening to him in the changing room, how he sees things and what the next step is on the football pitch and how he wants to evolve the team. And I just think it's incredible that we all just go, well, he's given him all his ideas. You've got to see it yourself. You've got to be able to change things as well. So I think we don't give him as much credit for learning off Pep, but also taking it to a new level himself and evolving it in his own
way. Absolutely, I totally agree with that. The elephant in the room has to come out was the Brentford goal that was scored by Ivan Toney. Mm. And you were watching the game, and we were a little bit dismayed with some of the lines or lack of lines that were going VAR. And it was proven after that Brentford player was offside. Norgaard was offside in the build-up before he put the ball across to Ivan Toney. Toney scores. Brentford get a share of the points. 2 points dropped for Arsenal. Massive mistake by VAR, who have, under Hal Webb, come out and apologise, which I think at least is a step forward, and they've admitted...
Did they apologise?
Well, I think...
Sort of.
It's a sort of apology, but at least it's a step in the right direction of owning the situation.
Yeah.
Doesn't help Arsenal. Shouldn't happen in the Premier League, something the Premier League have to deal with, because they owe Arsenal an apology, they owe the fans an apology, they owe the team an apology, they owe the referee an apology. VAR's there to support and help the referee, and he badly got it wrong. But despite all that, can Mikel Arteta use some of that? We talked about siege mentality, and we'll talk about Manchester City in a minute. Can Mikel Arteta use some of that to galvanise his team?
Well, I think it's something that he's going to have to pick them up, because they will have felt hard done to.
goal. He made a big point, didn't he, in his presser? Absolutely. He jumped on it and quite rightly was saying that, you know, that the goal shouldn't have stood.
Well, come the end of the season, if you lost the title by a point or 2 points and you look at that decision and what happened, we often say that the offsides are... They are usually cut and dry and they're looked after. But again, it's humans looking after technology.
Human error
again. And there is, it's disappointing. And there is another side to it and say, we all make mistakes.
Correct.
And that's part and parcel of it. And sometimes we can overanalyze it and we can say, well, it should never happen. It's part and parcel of it. The only thing I look at is the World Cup. And you say, from that side of the technology where it's...
Yeah.
You had, like a chip in the ball and the imagery, then that is a different level, and maybe that's what we need to put in to take that human error away. But from Mikel Arteta's point of view, I think the focus won't be on that side of it. I think it'll just be purely not to be beaten in the game.
Yeah,
not to win it.
Yeah. To win would be great, but not to get beat. Important, yeah. And you're right.
For the world's greatest athletes...
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. 5 rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Let's move on to Manchester City, because a lot of attention, a lot of eyeballs on them with the Premier League allegations about the irregular payments, etc. 112, I believe, cases that they've got to deal with. There was a lot of speculation about what this might do to the club, what might happen, what might be the consequences of this. Pep Guardiola was very stoic on Friday in his press conference. I thought stood up for his football club, backed the people who run the football club, believed in what they said, and talked about... One of my takeaways was a great line where he said, the lawyers have got to do their job in the courtroom. My players have to do their job on the pitch. And they did the job. They got it done against Aston Villa, 1-3-1, and they entered 3-0 up in the game and then gave a bit of a sloppy goal away to Ollie Watkins, but got the 3 points, the most important thing. Is this something that's going to stay with Man City through the course of the season? I mean, they were at home in this game and the fans played their part. We had great scenes before the game kicked off. We had great support as the match started. But when they go away from home, Steve, and we've all been there where it's hostile, where it's a negative atmosphere, could that not affect a title run?
With most other teams, I'd probably think it could. But I think this team's so mentally strong. I think Pep's... hugely mentally strong. I think it's how you put things across to your players. But listen, every club will try and upset Manchester City in any way they can with the fans. But the quality on the pitch that they have, they will silence them in some way. I really do feel that. I think it'll be a little bit hostile towards the first maybe 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. But then when you start seeing Manchester City play... And they'll soon silence a crowd. We're going to see it at the Emirates, aren't we? The first time away from home, and we'll sort of know what
in
reactions.
A huge high profile game.
Absolutely.
The world is watching.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the Arsenal fans are going to do whatever they can to feel that they'll upset City.
Yeah, but it's interesting when you hear the players come out or the manager, like you say, they can't change what's going on at the highest levels of the club. Everything's about we do our job on the pitch and we let everyone else deal with those other situations, and I'm sure that's the way the players will look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you always, I always get the sense with Manchester City, their possession and the way they keep the ball almost quietens the crowd down.
It does, yeah.
And then totally they stabilise the opposition. So, yeah, Manchester City got his job done, beat Aston Villa. So let's look forward to the big game. Obviously, we've got a couple of more days to enjoy the build-up and see what happens and all the backstories and the Artetas and Pep and the Sorcerer and the Apprentice and all that that we love. Let's get down to the nuts and bolts. Arsenal at home, if they play well, can they win this game?
Yes, absolutely they can.
I totally agree.
Because they can hurt Manchester City. I still think there's a vulnerability at the back of Manchester City.
Yeah.
Pep keeps on changing the back line. I don't think Edison's being quite at his best from what... I mean, even getting caught out on the ball and being quite lazy at times with his passing, which is something that we don't often see from him. But I just think... you can get at Manchester City. Yeah. I think you can cause them problems. I think they switch off at times in defence, and the record hasn't been as good, goals conceded, etc. So, and again, I go back to that quality in forward positions, and I look at Odegaard, and I think, can he unlock a defence? Absolutely, he can.
Yeah.
Can Saka beat, whether it's Ake or Laporte in the left-back position, can he take him on 1v1 and make something happen for Nketiah to score a tap-in? Of course he can. So I look at those positions and just think, yes, they can hurt them. And also the pace that they've got. Pace to burn down both flanks. Pace hurts teams, and whether they're the top team or not, you'll always get hurt by pace.
Turnovers and transitions, I just feel for Arsenal, if they can do well in turning the ball over and quickly attack.
Yeah.
You know, we all talk about Haaland and his threat for Manchester City, but I always think if Martinelli and Saka are right on top of their game, they can be match winners for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think they've got to play on the edge a bit, haven't they?
Yeah.
Just play
yeah.
almost, we call it a cheat role, don't we, in football, where we say they don't just come back all the way.
Mm-hmm.
They almost, because of the home team, they play on the other side and think, if it breaks
if
down,
breaks
I'm going to ask the question of Kyle Walker
or
Ake or Laporte, whoever it might be, whether it's Rico Lewis as well. So it'll be fascinating to see whether Arsenal have got that bravery in them to do that. Mm. And that's... I think if it was any other team, they would.
Yeah.
But because it's Manchester City, it's a bit like, can we take that chance to do that?
Yeah, fascinating game. Well set up, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Peacock. One we're all looking forward to. Arsenal v Manchester City. You just feel that this game is going to have a bearing somewhere down the line on where that title might end up.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's how big the game is. Okay, mate, let's move it on to a team that's ticking along very nicely, actually. They won at Elland Road 2-0, Manchester United. I know this isn't your team, and as a Liverpool and as a Red, it might be hard to give some praise. But we did a tactical breakdown on Ten Hag and just talked about how he changes games, how he can influence games, how he uses his substitutes, how he gets games going. I mean, Rashford 13 goals in his last 15 all competitions.
Yeah.
Incredible. You know, he's got Sancho back into the side. Garnacho comes on, scores, and reminds the manager that he can be a player. I just get the sense these some solid building blocks being put in place from Manchester United for success that might come down the road.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me when Ten Hag came in, I loved his first press conference.
Mm.
Respectful, but don't cross the line with me. Just that was just to the press.
Mm.
And as a player, I'd be watching that thinking, ooh, I'm going
to
be on my toes
careful,
here.
Yeah.
But I think the best managers have got that. I think Klopp's got it. I think Guardiola's got it. I think Thomas Tuchel.
I mean, you can have it in different ways, Steve. And it's a really interesting point because I've had managers who can be aggressive. I've had managers who are good talkers, managers who are intelligent, managers who can find a different way to push that button. There's
absolutely
no set way of doing it, is there?
No, there isn't. But what I really like, and the big thing is everyone went at the beginning of the season, they're going to be nowhere near it because of the first two games, the Brentford game and was it Brighton as well, the first game.
Yeah.
So you look at them two games, and I always thought, well, don't judge him on two games. Mm. It's a bit too much of that because they were, as much as the pre-season went well, we all know it's still pre-season.
Yeah, yeah.
You're almost going through the paces, the opposition, who you're playing. It's just to get minutes in your legs. And in your mind as a player, you're thinking, I don't want to get injured for the first game. So there's not wholehearted challenges. There's a different way of playing. But I always thought the season would be more like a roller coaster. I thought it's going to be up and down all the way. Well, it was down. And since then, it's pretty much been on the way up. And I just think it's credit to Ten Hag and what he's done. He changed his style of play at the beginning of the season and went a little bit more direct.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'd not seen that side of his teams before because I watched a lot of Ajax in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And I thought, it was very interesting to see, no, I'm not afraid to do that. I'll get the results and then I'll slowly implement the way I want to play. Yeah. And then we saw the tactical changes against Leeds. Very clever, very quick to do them as well. Not afraid to do them throughout the game, which I like about him. Yeah. I think on the sidelines as well, I think he sort of has a presence.
Command, doesn't he?
He has such a nice presence about him, where when you look across, he's never flustered. He's in control of the situation. Player asks him a question, I've got the answer straight away, what you want, or if I haven't, I'll give you it in a couple of seconds. Yeah. I always think he looks in control, and I like that about him.
Yeah, it's a good point. You dealt with the Ronaldo situation, I thought.
Brilliant.
Perfectly allowed Ronaldo to almost hang himself, show him his true colours, and then moved him out of the football club, and we've seen the benefit from there.
And then the Rashford situation.
The Rashford situation. Superb. It was a brilliant shot at the end of the game where there was him and Rashford with his arm around, talking and smiling, and you know, it's a very different Marcus Rashford in the form of his life for Manchester United.
Absolutely.
And that's off down to what Ten Hag has done. One person I was really interested in, again, interested in your take, Harry Maguire was brought back into the first team, played with Luke Shaw as the two centre-backs, Varane and Martinez got a rest. Martinez did come on as a sub. And we do know they've got Barcelona in the Europa on Thursday.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there was any eye towards that, but how important is it for the Manchester United captain to still get the right minutes? Because people are saying, like, well, if he's not going to be there, may as well sell him. But this is an England international, Manchester United captain. Yes, he's had a bit of a bad time, but can Ten Hag bring him back into the fold? Rashford wasn't in great nick when Ten Hag came to the football club. He's changed him.
Yeah.
Has he got the man management, the skills, and pushed the right buttons to get more and better out of Harry Maguire?
I think he does, and I think it's a great point. I think the other one's Wan-Bissaka. We all thought he was out the door, and now what we see from Wan-Bissaka is coming back into it.
Yeah.
Did he miss out with illness, was it, the game
before? Yeah, he was ill.
And that's just, imagine him now. Yeah. He'd be kicking himself thinking, is that my opportunity? Was that what I want? So it's a shame that he missed that opportunity. But from Harry Maguire's point of view, I'd be looking at him thinking, I can get back in this team with a man manager like that who can put his arm around me at times, but also tell me a few home truths.
Yeah, when I'm not doing so well.
You're not playing well enough.
Yeah.
You're not good enough to be in my team yet. Okay, well, what do I need to do? I'll tell you what you need to do. I said it on the show the other day. I almost think we're doing him a disservice. I think we're being a little bit disrespectful by saying, why is he playing?
Yeah.
He plays for England and he's the club captain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big thing, that. So we've no player, and I think maybe a couple of players that you can probably say, Ronaldo and Messi, and you look at them, but no player doesn't suffer confidence and lose the confidence at some point and has a dip in the career. I went through it, and I'm sure many other players, and it's how you get out of that. And sometimes you can have the right manager to help you through that. It's how they manage it, how they think it's right for you. I think it'll be a very interesting situation come the end of the season to see how much game time Maguire's had and whether he stays at the club or leaves. Because I think in January, I think I'm right in saying that Ten Hag didn't want him to leave. He wanted him to stay.
There was a lot of talk, wasn't there, that he could be out the door.
Absolutely.
Managing things pretty nicely at the moment. Ten Hag, Manchester United, we're up to second, I think, just dropped back to third place now. But still, listen, some might say still in the title race.
I believe so.
46 points at the moment. Arsenal on 51, Manchester City on 48. So, yeah. Manchester United ticking along nice.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
Paris Olympics, Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history. And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
United!
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Let's move it to the Merseyside derby, because this was always going to be one of the big games of the weekend. A Liverpool team got beat 3-0 last week by Wolverhampton Wanderers, an Everton team that won 1-0 against leaders Arsenal. So lots of attention on this game. Many thinking that, you know, Everton in good shape, could go to Anfield and get all 3 points. Didn't quite work out that way. And, you know, there was the Tarkowski hitting the post 15 seconds later, Mo Salah scoring at the other end, that pretty much put a different slant on the game. But it was better for Liverpool, I would say. You know, you live in the area, you play for the football club. It wasn't classic Liverpool. It wasn't, you know, Liverpool at their very best. But there were signs of, I thought, recovery. Yeah. It was two classic counter-attacks with speed and precision finishing. A front three that looked quite dangerous and sort of have a bit of combination play and a little bit of life. And many positives, I think, for Jurgen Klopp to start to build on as his team move up from 10th to 9th. That's the state the club's in at the moment.
Yeah, I think if this had been at Goodison, I think we'd have probably said this would have been a lot more difficult. But the game literally hinged on that moment of Tarkowski hitting the post and then just the turnover, how quickly Liverpool broke.
13 seconds later.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, the pace of Darwin Nunez down that left-hand side. But then it was the ability, the composure to pick that pass into Mohamed Salah. But I thought once Gakpo scored his goal, the confidence just started to come back into every single player. It was almost like a sigh of relief. Right, we've gone two up. I think if it had stayed at 1-0 for maybe to 60, 70 minutes, I think the crowd would have got anxious. I think the players would have felt that a little bit nervous themselves. Yeah. But we saw Gakpo coming into space, turning, running at players, starting to be physical with players and bounce them out the way. The second goal where we see Robertson driving past Seamus Coleman and Trent Alexander-Arnold flying down that right-hand side, and then the quality of the ball in. I think it was a really good performance. Often when you play in a Merseyside derby, you say it doesn't matter about the performance. Yeah, just get the result. Yeah. And I'm sure Jurgen Klopp would have thought that before the game. But luckily for him, he got a solid performance in the first half by getting a goal. But then the second half, they created so many opportunities. And he spoke after the game and he said, the amount of situations that we've created, when did you last see that? He knew it himself.
Yeah.
He's been waiting for this to happen. So, it was a good night for Liverpool.
I just felt the relief in Jurgen Klopp. He talked about desperation before the game, and we need to enjoy the game. You made a big note about talking about the fans as well and how important they were to be with the team, to lift the team, to stay with the team. Because, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes, Everton are bunkered in, making it difficult. It's not a great game. It's not a great spectacle. And those kind of games can go anyway and almost play more into Everton's plans than they do to Liverpool's. But he got the goal and they got the win. And as I say, the front three looked all of a sudden a little bit more dangerous and looked like they're combining. Bajatic, the midfield player, straight games now. He's an absolute bonus.
Yeah.
Getting Jota back, getting Firmino back in the mix.
Van Dijk back on the bench.
On the bench. I think all those are positives from Liverpool's point of view. So from now to the end of the season, Champions League looks and feels like that's going to be too big of a stretch. In terms of finishing,
it's only 9 points, though, isn't it? Now
it's 9 points. And Liverpool would have to go on one of those runs that Liverpool have done in the last 5 years to go close or to win a title. I'm just not sure Liverpool are quite at that level yet. I mean, they're away at Newcastle next week, which will give us maybe an indication of things starting to come back together. But Jurgen Klopp seemed to me as though he needed that today as much as his team needed it.
Oh yeah. I think even the fist bump at the end, the last one.
Yeah.
It was like he almost couldn't throw it, could he?
Yeah.
Almost dropped his arm. He looks tired, Jurgen. But why? I think you would be at this point, as in.
He's had to take a lot on, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. The talk behind the scenes of the club being sold, a lot of his staff have left as well behind the scenes. Michael Edwards, who's the. Sort of buys all the players and helps him with that side of things on the transfer committee. I think, obviously, him leaving would have been a big. Lost to Jurgen Klopp. Yeah. I know he tried to convince him to stay, wanted him because he knows how important he is. But the losses to any manager will hurt them.
Yeah.
And the sleepless nights of how do I fix this? And when you're a great manager and you're an elite manager and you go through these tough times, they don't go through them as often. because they're used to winning so often. So he'll have been thinking, how do I fix this? And it's taken a long time. I'm not saying it's fixed now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that will have been, he'll sleep well tonight.
Yeah. Step in the right direction.
Yeah, he'll sleep well. And I think he's been prickly in the press back in England. I think we've seen that. Yeah. And I think even his interview after the game was a lot more polite.
Yeah.
That feeling that he had on his face and the smile.
That's
so,
a good Klopp, isn't it?
That's
a good Klopp.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
And when things go well, there's no one better than him. Let's quickly just a word on Everton, because well set up for 20 minutes or so, they're in the game. They're what, a width of a post difference from taking a 1-0 lead, which would have made it very different in Anfield, very different game. And, you know, if Liverpool has struggled to maybe get a goal before half time, go in 1-0. You don't quite see the game playing out in the same way. So I think things for Sean Dyche to work on. I thought they were pretty poor going forward today. Yeah. Only one shot on target, no real threat. Went with Ellie Sims, young player who's been brought back from on loan from Sunderland. Didn't really work with his physicality to try and hold the ball up. They would put Demarai Gray and Neil Maupay on later and maybe looked a little bit better there. But work to do for Sean Dyche. But he said a really interesting thing when our friends at Sky, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, interviewed him. And he said, I'm not going to react game by game and get up and get down. I want consistency of performance in training and in games. And I thought the base was there, not too bad. Five in midfield and a back four. Yeah. But once they won the ball, I didn't think they were quick and incisive enough with the second pass to ever really put Liverpool under pressure.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Sean Dyche and that comment that he made about the consistency, I think if you had an inexperienced manager, he'd be thinking, he'd be hoping for a win tonight and thinking, like, I need to get a win. Mm. Whereas Sean Dyche knows that this won't relegate them.
Yeah.
There's more to come and there's more points to come.
Games, yeah.
And I think he'll also know that if I put myself in Sean Dyche's shoes, the one thing I'd say when I went into the club is, at home, we have to get maximum points because it's a tough place to play, Everton.
Correct.
You've
played
there yourself and it's very hard, isn't it? So he'll know that the home form is the best part of staying up. And he'll have said, if we can go to Anfield and maybe pinch a point, then great. But if not, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. And Everton fans won't want to hear that, but that is the bigger picture.
That's the reality, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think the disappointing thing was the forward play, like you say. My concern was when he starts Ellis Sims and he doesn't play Neil Maupay, what does he do now for the next game? If he wants Maupay, Maupay looked like he was sulking at half-time. And he'll have been disappointed.
Yeah.
So it's now that side of the man management now. Can Sean Dyche go to Neil Maupay and almost with his tail between his legs make him say, you're my main guy
I made
now.
A bit of a mistake on that one. Would you get the sense Sean Dyche
I think he would.
Can do, and it's good. Demarai Gray is another option that he could throw up there as well. So, it'd be interesting to see if he does that. Calvert-Lewin, you know, the injuries is a real blow for him and for Everton.
I don't think you can count on him, can you?
No, that's a harsh thing to say,
but when you go into a changing room and you're a manager, right, what's going to be team going to be from now till the end of the season? Because you look at Sean Dyche, he doesn't change much, does he?
No.
And he'll be looking at that centre forward position thinking, what can I do here? How can I change that? What can I make happen?
Yeah, it's a good point. Let's move it down to the Eddie Howe return to Bournemouth. Bournemouth 1, Newcastle 1. Probably seen as a disappointing result for Newcastle in the form they're in and where they're sitting in the table. But good point for Gary O'Neill, who things haven't been particularly going well for him. From Eddie's point of view, they just got to be careful. Form just dipped a little bit of late. Bruno Guimaraes, actually, it might be something that makes a big difference. Just that creativity from midfield. Almiron did score, but not being quite on top of his game. St Maximin started this one as well. Might we just see a few more of these iffy results for Newcastle in the next few weeks? Big game talked about, at Liverpool at the weekend, which is going to be a real tester.
Yeah, I think the big thing for Newcastle is that they're at home in that game, which is big for them. Yeah. Watch this game as well. We had a close eye on this one. And it was I always think Newcastle are a better team without St Maximin in it. I think he's too selfish. I think he plays a game individually. If Guimaraes would have been fit, I think he starts in midfield. And I think he played Joelinton
higher
up on the
pitch. Left-hand side,
And as much as he's been a great centre midfielder, Joelinton, I still think he's an upgrade on St Maximin playing in that higher position. And I think he just brings a better balance towards the team. Maybe Anthony Gordon might play there at the weekend against Liverpool. It's caused Trent Alexander-Arnold problems in the past as well. And Eddie Howe might be looking at that thinking, now that he understands how I want them to play, he can move him into that wide left position. But I just thought they were a little bit lethargic in the game, not as quick in the passing, the way they've moved it about. They always look difficult to break down.
Yeah.
However, conceding a goal against Bournemouth will be disappointing for them. But Bournemouth are scrapping for their lives, so nothing's ever as simple
easy
as it
given.
Looks
not,
on paper,
not in the,
is
not
it,
in the Premier League.
No.
And, you know, no Callum Wilson, who picked up a bit of muscle injury.
There's
a little bit of a worry that these niggles keep coming.
Yeah.
The other thing I just think from Newcastle point of view, and I know these are focused with the fans and there's focus in there, you've got a League Cup against Manchester United coming up in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
You just wonder if some of the attention starts to go there, because everybody knows what winning a cup would do to that area and what scenes we'd see. In Newcastle, but a huge game against Liverpool, and they've got to take care of business before they get to that League Cup. And I'm sure that's a message Eddie's trying to give to his team.
Yeah, I think if you want to progress the football club, it is about winning a trophy. But I think the big thing is getting Champions League football. If you want to move your club forward, you've got to be known globally. You've got to play in the biggest competitions, because if an agent then or an official from Newcastle rings up and says, "This is Newcastle."
Yeah.
Oh, you qualify for the Champions League didn't you? Yeah, that's appealing. So if you want to progress the club forward, you've got to get in the Champions League. However, on the flip side of things, if you've not won a competition or a cup competition for however many years, Eddie Howe will be looking at that thinking, I can go down in history here and I can become a great within a short space of time. When we were all looking, when Newcastle got bought out, we were all thinking big name.
Yeah,
and
stop
said,
gap for Eddie Howe.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people were thinking, well, he basically got Bournemouth relegated.
Yeah,
but he's improved, he's learned from that. And this is the big thing in football is, don't judge someone on the past. Mm. Think about the future and judge them what they're going to do over that period of time, because we all learn from our mistakes. It's like myself and you.
Yeah, of course.
We make a mistake on the TV and things like that, and you kick yourself, but you go, okay, I'm not going to let that happen again. I'm going to try and learn from that and move on from it. And I think Eddie Howe's done that, because you look at Bournemouth when they played, it's far too easy to score against.
Yeah, they were,
Newcastle now, so difficult to play
best defensive
against.
Record in
yeah,
the league.
Brilliant.
Well, you're sitting in Robbie Musto's seat, and I often ask Musty the tough question, so I'm going to give it to you, the tough question, and he usually doesn't give me an answer, but I'm sure you will. If you're Eddie Howe, which one do you take? You get one or the other. You get Champions League spot, or you get a League Cup.
League Cup.
I'd agree.
All day. Because
less money, less kudos, less, you know, but when somebody firms up and you say, I've won the League Cup, or somebody firms up and you say, we're in the Champions League.
Yeah.
But I think for that area, for that football club,
absolutely,
to kick something off. I always remember, I spent a bit of time around Chelsea. I'd just finished my career. I was getting into media. And Mourinho came 2004. And I had a bit of time. I spent some time at the training ground and spoke to a few people. And I always remember somebody at Chelsea said to me, as soon as he came in the door, he said, I'm going to win the League Cup. He said, it'll be done by February. Mm-hmm. It'll be the first trophy I win. I'll start my legacy at the football club. And after that, he said, I've got a winning mentality. I've got dressing room.
100% agree.
And I couldn't believe, and it was just seeing that and watching it, he went on to titles and all the other things that he won at Chelsea, that he honed in on that League Cup being the most important thing that he did. And I just think, Eddie Howe, I've always thought for Newcastle, you know, when Alan Pardew was there and even Steve Bruce was there, like, win the League Cup.
Yeah, go after
win the League Cup, even if you're struggling, you know, if you finish fifth bottom of the table, but win the League Cup.
Yeah.
And I used to see them play some weakened teams in the Cup, and I was just scratching my head thinking, like, why?
Yeah, well, I was part of an Aston Villa team that got to the final of it was then the Carling Cup.
Oh, yeah.
And we got beat by Manchester United. And it's still to this day one of the biggest regrets that I've not, like, I didn't win that final.
Yeah.
It still eats at me now. But we were also in the running for the Champions League spots. And I'm still convinced that that knock on effect of cost us the Champions League. We end up finishing sixth. I think if we'd have won that, like the Mourinho effect, I think we'd have gone, here we go.
Go again.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And just that mentality,
really funny,
you'd have
mentality.
Felt 10 foot tall and you'd have thought, here we go, we can win now. But I totally agree. I think you win the League Cup. If you can get a trophy in the cabinet, and you'd say it for a big club straight away, but I'm just talking a trophy for Newcastle would be unbelievable.
absolutely. But there'll be a big game ahead of that before that St. James when Newcastle and Liverpool. And that's a game with a bit of history. We've had some great classic games in the past. So we'll look forward to.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
That one. Let's move on to Leicester City because we Leicester 4, Tottenham 1. Tottenham got goal ahead. Antonio Conte was back on the sidelines after his surgery and you know played his part in the team makeup. But to go 1-0 up and concede 4 goals after beating Manchester City last weekend kind of tells you everything you need to know about Spurs and where they are.
Yeah, I think it, you look at Spurs at the moment and listen to a lot of the sort of the phone-ins back in England, mm-hmm. and a lot of Spurs fans are saying that they would take the style of football that Antonio Conte plays if it was successful. But now it's not being successful. A lot of people are saying they don't want him to stay at the football club. They don't like the style of football. They don't want to watch it. It's boring. Then you get the other side of it where they're saying, well, he hasn't got the right players to do it.
Yeah.
But he's had time and he's had money to bring players in, mm-hmm. And it's not quite worked out for him. I almost look at Conte at the moment and I think a lot of people say, well, how can you sit in a chair and question him? He's won titles you sit behind the TV screen, you haven't had the bottle to get up and take that challenge on yourself. Well, you can talk about it because you've been in changing rooms with managers and you understand what the makeup is. I talked about Ten Hag before, and a simple thing, when you look across at your manager and he's got his head held high and he looks in control, every time I look at Conte, he's like this. He's got his head down. And it's almost like the body language is like, I'm struggling here, I don't know. It's almost like he doesn't believe in the players.
Yeah.
When you look across and you're a player and you're thinking, he doesn't like me. Or he doesn't trust us or something.
Yeah.
There's something not quite right at the moment. I worry about the Harry Kane situation for Spurs in the summer. Will they cash in or will he stay?
Mm.
I think that's a huge part of things because Harry Kane's on the end of 4-1 losses away at Leicester. He'll be thinking, I know everyone talk. The big talk at the moment is, would you take the goals or would you want more trophies?
Yeah.
I still think if Harry Kane leaves, he gets both.
Yeah, can he have both?
And I think that's one of the things. So it's a worrying time for Spurs because we talk about Antonio Conte and we say defensively sound, really good defensively. It's not quite working for them.
No, it isn't. You know, maybe for them they'll say no Hugo Lloris, no Christian Romero in the team.
Mm.
You know, players out injured who weren't available. But I always think Eric Dier is always a great barometer of Spurs. You know, starts the season in really good form, gets an plays for England. Conte talked about one of the best defenders in Europe. Then you see him other days where his concentration's poor, he makes bad errors, he doesn't show any leadership. And if you're going to play Antonio Conte's style of football, and I saw him again, watched him very much when he was at Chelsea, he builds a team around a defence that's not going to concede too many goals.
Correct.
You're going to have to work so hard to get goals against. And then his counter-attack football, played a different style, if it was a Diego Costa or Harry Kane, and in Hazard and all like, he has quality players who can win the game at the top end of the pitch. Spurs still continue to have quality players who can win the game at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah.
What you can't rely on is a Spurs team who aren't sometimes just going to make mistakes, not defend well or bad, but just make errors that are going to lead to goals. And I include the goalkeeper in that, Hugo Lloris, who has been a brilliant servant for the football club and a World Cup winner. But, you know, certainly over the last few weeks, we've seen shots and things go on goal that actually, you know, the injury might have come at a decent time where he can just be taken out of the limelight and get himself right. So work to do for Antonio Conte. I'm just going to pause here and take a moment to give my underappreciated performer of the week, B. Rog, Brendan Rodgers, is a man who generally gets criticised because of some things he says, some ways he reacts, that he's not quite the real deal, that he can get so far and then he's a bit of a thing that he kind of bottles it, or doesn't ever get things over the line. Leicester team that, you know, has lost a number of players. It's very different from the team that won titles and even that won the FA Cup. But he's slowly getting players fit. He's slowly building the team, got one or two players in the window that have certainly helped them. Iheanacho up front at the weekend was excellent. Helped score goals, assisted goals. James Maddison back in the team scoring goals. And I think he's just a bit of an easy target at times, Brendan Rodgers. Mm. Good coach. Works well with players. I know him reasonably well. Was on coaching badges with him, and when he was down at Chelsea, I got to know him a little bit when he first started off in his coaching career. And somebody who I think is an easy target for people to criticise. So my underappreciated performer of the week, I think, goes to Brendan Rodgers.
Good call,
Brendan Rodgers. Right, let's move on to a few other results this weekend. West Ham 1, Chelsea 1. A lot of excitement with the Chelsea team when it came out. Saw the team sheet, we see all the names, all the excitement. Mudrick and João Felix, Havertz. You know, Mason Mount was on the bench, interestingly enough, wasn't part of it. But we see a lot of a look towards what Chelsea might look in the future with Graham Potter. But again, it didn't quite go to plan. Mm. Went 1-0 up, West Ham got an equaliser, and then game was in the balance for a little while.
Flattered to deceive, don't they, at the moment. And again, we, like you say, a lot of attacking talent on the pitch. I think Graham Potter said in the game, and David Moyes said after it as well, great first 20 minutes from Chelsea.
Yeah.
But then just took the foot off the gas, and West Ham came back into it. They out-battled them. I thought they won the fight, which was
turned
important
it into
to
more
them.
Their game.
And they did. And that's where, when you're an elite team, you just pass around that. Yeah. You move the ball quicker. Mm. And I thought Chelsea tried to join in that battle and just got out-muscled completely. A few mix-ups for the goal in the overloads and wide positions. We spoke about it.
Fullbacks and
wingers.
Just let's revisit that again, because maybe some of our listeners or viewers didn't see the game at the weekend. But I was talking about, so the relationship, let's say, between a fullback and a wide player, and you were a fullback, is so key that you have to know what the guy in front of you, that winger, is like. And we get all sorts of players. Some who are going to be diligent and track all the time. You know, if somebody comes on the outside, he's going to go. You know, the others who are going to look at you and go, I ain't coming back over the halfway line. So you know you have to deal with that. And those relationships build up over time and playing together for a period. Now, what we see with Chelsea is constant changing of often the fullbacks, sometimes through injury, sometimes through tactics, and often changes of the wide play. So at some point, I was saying at the weekend, Graham Potter's just got to pare it down a little bit and just allow some relationships to build so I know what you're going to do and what somebody next to me is going to do, rather than it being always like a different midfield player, a different wide player, a different this player, we're playing different slots. You don't build any chemistry that way.
No, I think the big thing for me when I watched the game was, so West Ham played with wing-backs. Yeah. They changed it and went to three at the back, which David Moyes has had a lot of success with. So he had Sofal on the right-hand side, and then he had, bear with me, who did he have on the left-hand side? Emerson, goal scorer.
So he,
when you've got those two players, the decision then for Chelsea is do your full-backs go out or do your wingers go out to them two players? Now, because West Ham played with a forward three, so you had Bowen on the right, and then you've got Antonio down the middle and Benrahma on the right-hand side. Effectively, what Graham Potter said was, fullbacks stay in and stay with those two wide players. Yeah. Two centre-halves take care of Antonio. You're asking so much of your wingers then
to Mudrick
track back.
And Madueke on the other side to come back.
And you saw it with the goal. So the goal, when it comes in, so Fall has the ball on the right-hand side. Cucurelli drops back and almost allows the cross to come in. He's waiting, pointing
to at Mudrick,
saying, that's your job, closing down.
Yeah.
Then at the back post, Reece James has gone on to Benrahma because that's his man, and he's saying to Madueke on the back post, you've got to take care of Emerson. Mm. Switches off, Emerson comes in at the back post, and it's a lot of running for wingers to do.
Yeah,
I think the big thing for me is that you can shuffle across. Cucurella could come out onto that wide man. Yeah. Then the two centre-halves can come
across and shuffle across and let it work.
So I think that needs work. It's incredible that we're talking about elite players in world football in the Premier League.
Yeah. Getting those basic things.
And back to the drawing board.
He did say, didn't he, Graham Potter came and interviewed with us after the game and said, we have still got work on the training ground to do. And maybe that was evidence of it. Big game at St Mary's. Southampton 1, Wolves 2. Southampton went 1-0 up. Wolves lost a man. Lamina got sent off. Yeah. So you're thinking maybe this is the win that Nathan Jones wanted. And then see two goals, second half. And with that, he lost his job. Yeah. No real surprise in that one.
No, the big surprise for me was that he actually got appointed in the first place. I look at his what he's done in the game, and I think, yeah, done a good job at Luton. But then when he
struggled
went to take
to Stoke,
that step up to Stoke, he really struggled. But then he came out and did this interview where he said he's one of the best managers in world football, and his stats back it up. And I thought, this is a big claim in the Premier League. If you're not doing it in the Premier League with the players that you've got, then you've just got to taper it down a little bit. So I think we both said after the game we didn't expect him to stay in the job, and that was the end of him.
I think we need to pause for your underappreciated performer of the week, don't we?
We do, yeah. So I've gone for Lopetegui. I just think since he's come into the football club, he spoke straight away about the fitness level, said we're not fit enough, and I actually agreed with that, because when I watched Bruno Lage's teams, they were very slow, very monotonous in the way that they played, and they almost put you to sleep when you were watching them and thinking, come on. Straight away, first game, they score a late goal away at Goodison, Itnori with that blistering pace to get forward. But then to go down to 10 men, and whether it was a sending off or not, we don't think it was because of what we saw, but we don't know what was said.
Absolutely.
However, now it's on Lopetegui to make a big decision. He made two at half-time, changes two players, brings them on straight away. They find themselves back in the game, and then he makes another substitution. Goalscorer comes on, Gomez, and settles the game. But they never sat back. They didn't sit back in a shape and say, well, we'll just try and counter-attack when we can. They went after it. I thought it was magnificent from him. Yeah. And that could be a huge 3 points.
It's a great contrast, actually, to Nathan Jones, who's inexperienced, who never really changed anything at the football club and didn't get any kind of new manager bump. I think that's Lopetegui's third win since he's taken over the football club, and certainly made a difference to Wolves. I just look at Wolves and just think, they're going to be okay.
Good enough.
They're going to be okay. The M23 derby ended up in a draw. Crystal Palace versus Brighton. Another game that point of peace, but I'm afraid VAR became the headline maker. Estupian with a shot for Brighton, and apparently the line was taken off James Tomkins, who's the centre back for Crystal Palace, who was in front of Mark Gaye, who's the defender behind. I mean, we're laughing at it, but it's really poor. Brighton would have got themselves a goal and could have well been a different result. So, not another game. Good day for VAR at Selhurst Park, but a point each for both the teams.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that probably knocked the stuffing out of them a little bit, Brighton. But I still think the mistake from Sanchez, you can't look past that as well.
Yeah,
Brighton
Robert
were in
Sanchez. Yeah, he dropped the
ball,
didn't he?
They were in a good position, quite comfortable. Yeah. Credit to Tomkins. He anticipates him dropping that ball, which most centre-backs wouldn't do.
No, they'd be running back, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Strikers would always think, if they're always the optimist or the pessimist, aren't they? Yeah, so they're always looking optimistically at what might happen. But I thought Brighton should have got more out of the game, but for that mistake.
And last one, Fulham 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Forest were going to end a good vein of form, but Fulham have been one of these stories. Seventh in the league right now, 35 points. I mean, above Chelsea, above Liverpool. I've seen incredible what Marco Silva's doing.
Yeah,
and Willian, by the way, is probably close to my underappreciated. What a goal he scored. What form he's in.
Yeah, a tough start for Steve Cooper. Lost two of his centre-backs within the first five or six minutes.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean, that's tough.
It is
tough. To change that. Also, were the players fully warmed up on the sideline? Probably sat there getting the tracksuit bottoms on, having a little snack and relaxing, thinking, well, this is me for the afternoon, maybe till about the 60th or 70th minute. Might get called upon then. But he had to adapt, he had to try and change things and bring his two centre-backs on, Joe Worrell and Felipe, but it didn't quite work for them. Credit to Fulham. I don't think they've won in three going into the game.
Yeah.
And to win that game against an informed Forest team who are top of the form table in 2023, that is a really good result. And as you say, the goal from Willian.
Oh,
wow. I mean, he couldn't have put it anywhere else.
No, the
goal line was covered with players, and he goes above players and puts it in that top corner. Brilliant finish from him. And then, obviously, Solomon finishes the game at the end. But what I love about what Fulham have done under Marco Silva, the big thing for me is when you look at good teams in the Premier League, they've always got a good centre midfield.
Yeah.
And you look at Paulinho, you look at Pereira and Reid as well.
Yeah.
And I think
it's a great mix as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's
different
brilliant.
Styles.
And the way he's brought that in, yeah. I think that's why they're having such a good season. Combative, creative,
yeah.
and really comfortable on the ball.
And I've always said with the Fulham teams that have come up in the past, they lack that athleticism and physicality.
Absolutely.
That has to be a given in the Premier League. This
yeah.
team doesn't.
No.
And Marco Silva deserves loads of credit. Listen, mate, it's been absolutely brilliant to have you. So much better than Musty. I can't believe it.
I'll say that.
On a week when we've had big wins, bad losses, a few draws, apart from VAR, where there was no lines drawn, which is a big problem. We'll be back on Wednesday. We're going to react to the big game in North London as Arsenal host Manchester City, and we'll review games from the Champions League. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Stephen. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me. It's a good night from Steve. Good night.